of love.
Uncle Sam's done changed his status, implicate and appreciate us. Everywhere he goes, there's another war. It's a sugar daddy and a brother with a dollar bill for a father and mother. Uncle Sam just ain't no uncle anymore. Now, way back there in the Constitution, it says that the right of the revolution's the right of the man who thinks that things are wrong. But it sure don't say in the Bill of Rights everything belongs to the rich and white. Gotta change the world lifestyle before too long. Now Uncle Sam's done changed his status, collaborate, circumstantiate us. Everywhere he goes, there's another war. It's sugar daddy and big brother with a dollar bill for father and mother. Uncle Sam's ain't no uncle anymore. Uncle Sam's got ugly faces, poking him around in the strangest places, but even in Alabama he's refined. With tear gas bombs and napalm jelly, with a big red neck and a wobbling belly, Uncle Sam's got freedom fighting on his mind. Uncle Sam's done changed his status, infiltrate and judiciate us. Everywhere he goes, it's another war. It's a sugar daddy and big brother with a dollar bill for father and mother. Uncle Sam just ain't no uncle anymore.
I just want to say that I find a contradictory questions about the budget and money that have been asked of us that haven't been answered by the city council. And I want to point out that the city council has ignored the people who came last time and protested this development agreement, has ignored the city, the planning commission that voted 4-1 not to accept this development agreement, and I urge you not to accept the development agreement, especially 5.2, which uses city money to pay for the legal fees of the developer.
My name is Doug Brand, and first I'd like to thank Mayor Celia Scott and Councilmember Catherine Bowers for their strong and insightful statements before casting their votes in opposition to this ordinance at the first reading. I too am opposed to this development agreement. It was bad enough that the public property was sold, which housed the homeless garden project for 8 years. There's a lot of opposition to the sale in the form of 2,000 signatures submitted to the council appealing not to sell the property. This was ignored by the council, and then there was an additional 5,000 signatures plus were collected in a legal initiative in an effort to bring this before the vote of the people. And this initiative was branded by a particular council member in the press and in the council chambers as being disingenuous. As a result of the sale, the homeless garden project was displaced to a smaller temporary site, and now the two community garden projects are basically at the mercy of private developers. The goal of the garden and the beach flats is on the Canfield property, which the garden director was basically threatened of losing that site, the last city council subcommittee of the beach flats area. And the homeless garden project is on Swenson property on Schaefer Road. And now, to complicate that, the environmental concerns of the Poganuc area are being pitted against the needs of a permanent site for the homeless garden project. When Councilmember Rodkin responded to public opposition to the sale, he said, well, where's the money going to come from regarding funding the city? But as importantly, the question is, where is the money going to? From the $4.5 million cash out from Pelton, the council allocated $1 million towards the sale, towards the possible purchase of the Bombay property, but only if the balance of that money of $2 million comes from a citizen's initiative to raise that money or from a possible ballot initiative if it's passed by a supermajority. That cash in hand from the property actually goes to the broker, Norman Schwartz, of the private company, Bolton Hill, who gets $89,000 from the deal. and at least we know somebody in the community can afford one of the homes that would be built on that site for $700,000 or more. The development agreement and the city ordinance compounds the advantage to the private developer and compounds the disadvantages to the public. If there's a legal challenge to the sale, the city is obliged to pay one half of their legal fees. The city attorney stated that this agreement wasn't a requirement of the sale, and that it was the developer themselves who wrote the agreement. Councilmember Rockman stated at an earlier meeting that the agreement needs to be in place to protect the council's action with the sale of the property, and this alone has incredible value to the developer, and at the same time puts the city at financial risk, since it pits us, the citizens, against you, our elected officials. I'd just like to finish. What kind of business partnership between local government and private corporation pits its own elected officials against its own citizens? Since when is it acceptable that a private corporation writes a city ordinance to disadvantage the rights of its citizens? It sets a legal precedent which may be welcoming for the investment climate, but clearly impacts our democratic process. A development agreement like this wouldn't and shouldn't stand up to public scrutiny, since it's not in the public interest. And also, how can the city make an agreement like this with a property which it no longer owns? At the first reading of the ordinance, both council members Kennedy and Rockman proclaimed how much they had done for the Homeless Garden Project and how they preferred that the housing be clustered, and no doubt this is true, but it does not change what we've ended up with. Is this what the fate of a Beach Flats housing project in the beach area is going to be as well? And I'll wrap up in two more statements. It just sent a chill through anyone interested in local government when development agreements are being negotiated behind closed doors, as with the Bombay property, Terrace Point, and now the beach area plan. There are many imperfections in our democracy and our process, but the weight of law and clear mandate of those we elect to represent us should be squarely on the public side. Private developers should not profit from imperfections or the blatant actions within government at the expense of public resources, as it has been in the Pelton sale. We condemn this type of partnership, quote unquote, and see the consequences of too much of this on the state and federal level already, let alone on the local level. If you expect the public to trust the council on collaborative projects with private interests, please act in a trustful way on our behalf.
Project. Time to
again, some of the city council members, like to say, we decided to sell the property so long ago, and we all just came out late in the process. Was a homebound for the garden before they moved. Normally it takes approximately 3 years to certify soil as organic. The homeless garden is currently without a real home. Who is late here? It's not clear who is late. It's clear that late is on the part of the council there. Two young women went out and gathered 2,500 signatures in a courageous effort to save that space. Council majority said sure, but those aren't registered voters. We're too late anyway, but thanks for the signatures. Some council members said, let's speed up the process, turn up the voltage, let's sell this property before it reaches the ballot. The council said, even though it's too late in the process, we better hurry up and sell the property. The Friends of Carlton Street volunteered citizens of Santa Cruz, submitted over 5,000 signatures on a Friday afternoon. Escrow was to close the following Wednesday. The city had 5 days, 3 working days. A progressive council, a real progressive council, where in agreement or disagreement would have said, wow, a lot of people feel like we should vote on this issue. Let's hold up the sale until the signatures are counted and see if the initiative qualifies for the ballot. Nope, it's too late. How late? Thousands of people say wait. Council says no, too late, can't wait. It's important for people to know that along the past year, 2,500 signatures were collected on an advisory petition. More than 5,000 signatures were collected on a ballot initiative. This effort passed through at least two city commissions, the Planning Commission and the Parks and Rec Commission. They both voted overwhelmingly in favor of the democracy and against the flawed, rushed process that has come to characterize the Palm Street property liquidation. But one more paragraph here. Everything I've learned in 6 years as a graduate and undergraduate study at UCSC, 2 years studying in Mexico at the Facultad de Ciencias Políticas in the National University of Mexico City, 2 additional years working with the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, 6 months filling out political asylum applications for Salvador and Guatemala, never did I think I would see the egregious breach of the progressive and democratic tradition that I had witnessed during the Carlton discussion. Never did I think that I would be expressing that wonderful, or we collectively anyway, expressing that wonderful, inspiring phrase that a progressive city council, el pueblo unido jamás será vencido. The people united will never be defeated. The people are united in favor of the ballot initiative, they're united against the sales agreement, they're united against the development agreement. Don't pass the development agreement, let direct democracy flow, let the clerk finish counting the signatures. Thank you.
Horrible agreement. It's been pointed out ever so clearly, even by city staff for the Finance Commission, that there's no benefit to the city to enter into this agreement. And as I pointed out at a council meeting and at the Finance Commission meeting, I can see only one reason, and that is that we agree in advance to this commitment. Because otherwise, we just wouldn't be doing it. I don't understand how the council can go away from the kinds of things they said that citizens' meetings and debates and preparing to be on the city council. And I would like each of you to think, if you were the fledgling prospective council member right now, and you were at one of those forums, how could you stand behind this agreement? There is no possible way. 15 years ago, our planning progressive, radical socialist, feminist, Marxist people would never have done this under any circumstances. It's a bad agreement, and I implore you, if you don't need it, and you don't pass it. And especially don't employ taxpayer dollars from the citizens of the city, from the city of San Cruz, to fight those citizens. If you don't represent those citizens, who does? Who does? I've said, and Mike has told me many times that we're late. I've been to every meeting about every aspect of this for the last 15 years, every meeting. And I've said every meeting when it was a meeting, by the way, we don't always get, we rarely have seen the choice of whether or not to sell the land. It's always, well, if we sell the land, the subdivision should look like this. And if we sell the land, we'll get this developer. And I don't remember the choice being before the public of whether to sell the land, because every time we were told, oh, there'll be another time, don't worry. And then later, it's too late. Well, that just doesn't wash anymore. We've heard it enough times that it just doesn't wash. I've presented you with some photographs, and I'd like to get the originals to take back to the Parks and Rec Commission, because they have a matter regarding the water in this facility. And I can tell you, as a resident next to this property, next to our house field, for I think 24 years, it comes to a common street. There's a seasonal wetland out there, and these photographs show that. And that seasonal wetland is spread by the Felton property. And I've got before this microphone year after year after year after year and said, probably the wrong words because I said it's a drainage problem, but it's not a drainage problem. It's a seasonal wetland. And in fact, there has been no preparation planning to manage that. If we drain that in a conventional way, with subdivision wells, with gutters and curbs, you're going to destroy that seasonal wetland. You can't raise it and you can't lower it, or you will destroy it. And there is no plan on file. There is, however, a plan on file for a 36-foot wide street, but probably not one neighbor knows about that. 36-foot wide street, I went and paced off the width of Bay Avenue today, and it's 30 feet. This is an outrage. Look at these pictures, and look in your heart of hearts, and see what the heck it is we're tampering with. We've got reserves better than we've ever had before. We don't have to do this, and we sure don't need this horrible development agreement.
Hello, my name is Angela Lopez. I feel like I'm going to be able to say what I have to say in 3 minutes, and I feel like I've got a couple of lines that I've got to say about this meeting. I have to say, I've heard from the very beginning, I attended some of the very first meetings, and I don't ever remember being given a choice about keeping the land intact. I just remember being prepared with it. There's a couple of issues I wanted to bring up that I think would be probably the right thing. One of them is the making a declaration that was proposed in 1992. And I remember, you know, people came and posed this negative declaration, and now it's been completely wiped out, except for the leftover litigation of the inland park fees being paid by the developer. Recently, I went to a meeting in Scott's Valley about the Lincoln Bridge property, and the Native Declaration was about 5 times thicker than this. And I know that they've got boxes on it. And the last one was very interesting because the litigation compared to my Native Declaration, including insects and plants. And I think this will relate to something that Scott Kennedy brought up earlier, as he said he was an expert to make a decision on correlation. Now, how can you be an expert to make a decision on a piece of land that does have plants and insects and everything? I'm not an expert, but this Native Declaration to me is very poorly done. You probably seen that line job, but I don't agree with this, and a lot of other people don't either. And now that it's completely wiped out, I think it's ridiculous. This plan, also, besides the fact that the commercial aspects of land, there have been changes in the past, is it 6 years since this was recorded? In areas of culture and community and agriculture.
And that was City Council Tuesday night, in the early hours, actually Wednesday morning in the early hours, talking about the Pelton Street property and the Homeless Garden Project. And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz. I'm your host, Bathrob Spear Robert Norris, and we're in the midst of Bathrob Spear's Broadsides, 2 hours of community issues, civil rights for the poor, and all kinds of stuff. Shortly we're going to have a guest coming into the studio. I promised him to you at the beginning of the hour, Johnny Fresno. And Johnny is going to be talking about drug testing and his experiences with that. He is anonymous, or pseudonymous, actually, although sharp-eared listeners may be able to recognize him. Special prize for those who can guess who this individual is. Just call in at 423-4833. Before that happens, however, we're going to hear, hopefully, a little bit of an interview. Actually, I'm not going to promise that to you since we've been having such deck difficulties. I'm going to see if we can actually get into an interview here with Fort Lauderdale, which we promised you last week. I suspect we're not going to be able to because we have a peculiar tape deck here, which doesn't play, it plays just one track. And you can't, unfortunately, some of our stuff is recorded on the other track, so we have problems around that. But where is our mystery guest? That's the question. Maybe we could send out our local assistant here to find our mystery guest. He's going to find the mystery guest, and hopefully we're going to be beginning shortly. A little music here to cover the interim, and then we'll be on the air with Johnny Fresno.
There's a little sun-drenched island in the Caribbean Sea. It used to be like paradise, all fun and gaiety. You could take a plane from Florida, just 90 miles away, and live there like an emperor for 50 bucks a day. Happy days at an end. Uncle Sam, the poor old sod, ain't got a friend. The government took orders from the local CIA and always served the interests of the good old USA. The natives, they all knew their place and did what they were told. Hotels were air-conditioned and the beer was always cold. Happy days at an end. Uncle Sam, the poor old sod, ain't got a friend. One day in 1956, the year was almost run. 10,000 U.S. citizens lay browning in the sun. When a certain hairy Cuban, regardless of the risk, lit a big cigar and burnt those U.S. asses to a crisp. Happy days at an end.
Uncle Sam, the poor old sod, ain't got a friend. Well, the gangsters and the bankers, all the con men and the crimps, the corporation lawyers, all the bully boys and pimps, shouting freedom and democracy and other thrilling cries, flew back to God's own country like 10,000 blue-assed flies.
Happy days
at an end. Uncle Sam, the poor old sod, ain't got a friend. One by one, Batista's outposts were attacked and overrun by a band of compañeros led by him they called the man. He lit a big Havana as they rested at the halt, then through Oriente province went just like a dose of salt.
Happy days at an end.
Uncle Sam, the poor old sod, ain't got a friend. Fidel puffed a king-sized upman and Las Villas province fell. He lit a Monte Cristo and Batista ran like hell. Then he lit a Simon Bolivar and overran the south. And Big Daddy in the White House started foaming at the mouth.
Happy days at an end.
Uncle Sam, the poor old sod, ain't got a friend. When he lights a Laranjagos, Guatemalan workers rise. When he puffs a Castanado, Venezuelans organize. And Colombian guerrillas in their jungle bivouacs use the glow of his corona as the signal to attack.
Happy days at an end.
Uncle Sam, the poor old sod, ain't got a friend. Now that little sun-drenched island's full of folks who smoke cigars. You can smell the fine aroma in Peru and Panama. And when miners in Bolivia rise up to claim their rights, you can bet your life that Fidel's big Havana's burning bright.
Happy days at an end.
Uncle Sam, the poor old sod, ain't got a friend.
And that was Ewan McCall from an old album of Ewan and Peggy Seeger's back in the, I think it was actually the 70s. Yeah, 1973, At the Present Moment. And the song was Big Cigars. Well, we have a smoker in the studio with us, but I don't think he brought his big cigar along. That's Johnny Fresno, and welcome, Johnny, to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Thank you, Robert. It's nice to be back. It's been a long time. I'd like to say hello to all my family in Chicago, especially my brother Jimmy Fresno, the Fresnettes, Merle Fresno, Dirk Fresno, and all the other Fresnos. Thank you.
Well, I hope you didn't get Fresno'd out there. But, well, Johnny, what... What are you going to talk about today? What subjects do you think you can enlighten us on?
Sure. Well, tonight I think I'd like to talk about all you pusillanimous little pipsqueaks out there that allow yourselves to be drug tested. I think that all you have to do is say no to drug testing. You won't, and you might as well go bury your constitutional rights out in the backyard or flush them down the toilet. But if you did, they'd stop doing it.
Strong words there, Johnny. Are you yourself a man who declines to be drug tested?
Yes, I do.
You want to give us some description of when this last came up and what implications it had?
The last time I was drug tested was to convert myself from a contractor to a full-time employee for one of those big drug companies. I'm not going to tell you who, but they make Valiums. And the company nurse fired me. It happened that my boss was in Basel, Switzerland, doing I don't know what, so he couldn't get in there and give his 2 cents worth. But what happened, to be serious about this, is they lost a good worker, so he was denied the right to hire whom he wanted. I was denied a good position because my urine turned me over, because I was honest and used my own urine.
Now, you, of course, are a big-time heroin user, right?
No, that's not true. I do not use heroin.
We're talking about kind of combination of meth, LSD, and cocaine that they found in your bloodstream?
Well, no, they only found marijuana. Now, I used to do those drugs. I don't do them anymore, just herb. I believe, like the Rastafarians, that herb is cleansing. So if y'all out there, it's light-up time. If you've got it, share it, because that shit's the giveaway.
A man of no uncertain views. So what about now? You've been you're a part of the conventional everyday workaday world. You're a man who's fairly conventionally dressed, although you're informally dressed now. You support a family. You even have a, I don't know if you have a mortgage or you rent, but you're a man who's certainly not without the niceties of life. Has the drug testing situation gotten worse in the last decade?
The problem is not drugs. The problem is the prohibition against drugs, okay? One person who I think highly of told me that the lethal dose of marijuana is a 100-pound bale that hits you in the head, and it's true. If we have a problem in this country with drugs, it's with booze and it's with tobacco. And if you want to look at the statistics, I would recommend a very good book called The Longest War, written by two Yale scholars, that documents the waste of money and the throwaway lives that are incarcerated with the new mandatory 10-year sentences. You hear all that? You can go to jail. You can do federal time for 10 years for a joint because you guys want to say yes to drug testing.
Let's talk about drug testing. When did you first encounter this peculiar aberration in American society?
The first time I encountered drug testing was last year, when after 3 years of working at this corporation, they decided to convert me to an employee, and I was informed that I had to take a drug test. I thought it was manifestly unfair because they didn't test any of the employees they converted from the company that they acquired in a takeover.
Is this a company that, shall we say, guards the president's life or flies planes where you might say that there might be some rationale for testing people regularly for drugs?
Certainly not. Because if they did random drug testing, they would empty out half the research station on the spot. So we're put in this position of where we're hypocrites. You know, anybody can take a drug test. You can go to High Times, you can get somebody else's urine. There's all sorts of ways to beat a drug test. So people are encouraged to lie. So that's the message you're getting, you know. If you cheat, it's okay, and you will allow you to work here. We really don't care what you do, but there's this policy. So the policy is what gets you. And the policy is that if you have any drugs on you, you're not fit to work. Doesn't matter how well you perform your job. In the Navy, the biggest problem with sailors was they were all chronic alcoholics. But it didn't matter as long as they could show up and stand watch. The Navy really didn't care what, you know, if you got slobbering drunk or whatever, you shot yourself full of smack, as long as you could show up and stand your watch. So if you were going to work for me and I asked you, well, let me ask you this question. Do you use a rubber when you have sex, or do you think that that's an invasive and intrusive invasion of your own personal privacy? It's the same with do you do drugs, only this time they're making your urine turn you over.
Well, also, of course, there's the question about recreational use of drugs. Certainly, as you pointed out, the far more lethal tobacco and alcohol can be used, presumably, when you're not working in a recreational manner without consequence, provided you show up and do your job. Whereas if you smoke a joint off-duty, presumably that will stay in your system for a month. Right?
I think it is. I've talked to people who have cleaned themselves up to take drug tests. It's a pretty common practice among the U.S. merchant sailors. Quite a few of these guys are heads. You can always go on the fantail at sunset and toke up with the boys. The captain doesn't care as long as you get your work done. But you still have to obey the policy, and the U.S. Coast Guard in this case is the policing arm that demands that all sailors are drug tested. And yet if you look at the Exxon Valdez, it wasn't marijuana that made that boat crash. The captain was drunk on his ass.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's reminiscent. I was watching a film, but I guess that you even recommended to me the other night, called Citizen Cone, about Roy Cone, the second-in-command in the McCarthy hearings in the 1950s, and the kind of terror and fear that spread by the policies that were then enforced, whereby it wasn't so much, it really wasn't your political views, it was the policy, again. If you were homosexual, that was fine, provided nobody knew about it. And in essence, what this does is it gives a license to folks who have that kind of information or a private vendetta to ruin your career, to get you fired from your job, and not for anything that would be really criminal behavior. Although I suppose we should say that smoking marijuana is considered criminal behavior. Even patients are considered criminals these days by the federal government, which is trying to close down the cannabis clubs. But I see the same kind of thing operating, the same kind of opportunity for vindictive people to go after folks they don't like using these drug laws.
It all went downhill when they passed a seatbelt law and people stood still for it. But you people, you pusillanimous little pipsqueaks who won't get organized, who won't stand up and say no, are allowing all this to happen to you. So when this bulldozer rolls you over and they come along and they say, you know, we, the authority, think it'd be a pretty good idea if you stayed in from sunset to sunrise and we'll let you out to go to work, don't be surprised, because you're giving up your freedom when you say yes to drug tests. So, to paraphrase Nancy Reagan, just say no to drug tests.
Now, you did say no, correct?
Yes, I did say no. I was asked to retest and I could have cheated. But I told him, I said, you know, this is total bullshit. I will not take another drug test. I'm not going to put myself through this again. Here I am. I've been here for 3 years. You know, if the nurse fires me, then so be it. But I will not drug test. And I lost the job. It was a damn good one. But, you know, somebody's got to say no to the machine. Somebody's got to stand up and make a statement.
And you're also, are your employment opportunities, do you think, severely limited, or are you, shall we say, optimistic about your chances for getting hired elsewhere?
It's possible to get a job. I did that, but my mobility in the labor market is severely limited by a policy, by a stupid, decadent, archaic, insane, puritanical, right-wing, irreligious, un-American policy of testing American citizens for what they do in their bodies and what decisions that they make, that somebody else who knows better, and you know it's only a group of about 5 people that make these decisions, and there's 250 million of you out there and you won't do anything about it. Why do you get mad about the savings and loan?
If you are getting mad about these issues, of course you can call in and leave a message right on Senor Fresno at 423-4833. You're tuned, in case you've forgotten, to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM, and my host is
Johnny Fresno.
Actually, he's my guest. I'm the host, Robert Norris. Johnny, you also are, you have positions that are pretty outspoken on a number of things. Drug testing. You also have a position on the best way to resist the government. I guess you had some thoughts on that issue.
Yeah, you know, if you want to start a revolution, just start shooting. Che Guevara. Now, I'm not advocating the violent overthrow of the United States government, but, you know, if you really want to get something done, you know, what are you going to do when things get so bad that 1% of the population controls 99% of the wealth and you're all scrambling for the scraps? You ought to read Trinity. There's a good description of what happens when a foreign government, and in this case it's ours, because their principles are foreign to everything that is American, freedom, independence, self-reliance, took over in Ireland, and the Irish were starved to death during the potato famine when there was enough food to feed them, but it was being sold overseas to support the English aristocracy. Well, if you don't think that's not happening in this country, that there isn't an artificial aristocracy of wealth, well, then why don't you just roll over and die?
Harsh words for our somnolent audience out there. Actually, probably much of the audience that's listening is far from somnolent, but have you actually been involved in other action than simply saying no yourself to drug testing? Have you organized, gotten together with other people to stand up against this issue or to urge legislators to pass other kinds of laws or to demonstrate publicly? I guess smoke-ins were a favorite of folks.
I was there at the Ann Arbor smoke-in, at the Bloomington smoke-in, and at the Madison smoke-in. We organized, and during the Vietnam War, I was there on the front lines leading peace marches and getting thrown in jail, and it was great fun, you know? Abby Hoffman was right. Watching a riot on TV is boring. Being in one is a lot of fun. So maybe you guys ought to just get out there and riot a little bit, have a good time, and try and influence don't even try and influence it. Just go ahead and do it and say no to drug testing and say no to these stupid laws. And what are they going to do? Put us all in jail? It seems that's the way they're heading. I imagine in 30 years, California, everybody's either going to be in jail or working for the correctional institutions. That's one solution. I don't like it. Say no to drug tests. Question authority.
What about your co-workers? Did you get much support for your position? Did they think you were crazy to do this, or did they, you know, did they commend you? And did 5 people stand up and walk out with you? What happened?
Nobody would stand up and walk out with me. Although they all were, you know, since most of my co-workers smoked pot, the first reaction was fear, then denial, they denied Christ too, then acceptance. No, actually, most of them were pretty supportive of it, you know, of my stand on this. I can't dun my fellow workers. You know, we're all workers. And as soon as you guys realize that, you know, you don't own factories, you're workers, and start organizing unions. I urge you all to join labor unions and get organized. You'll make a political difference in the scene, you know. Just go read the Department of Defense budget if you really want to get ill. You probably need to smoke some dope after that. Good idea.
We actually have had a caller who called in on our secret phone line here, which isn't yet connected. Quote, don't pick up a gun. If we have a revolution, it must be a nonviolent one. Johnny, be good. Any comments to that, Senor Fresno?
Johnny is never going to be good. But thank you. Yeah, all right. I'll go along with this. I respect this opinion. Don't pick up a gun. I'm merely saying that if you want to start a revolution, that's what you're going to have to do is start shooting. Maybe you start shooting your mouths off. Maybe if more people start shooting their mouth off and getting in people's faces of authority and start organizing themselves against this irreligious, un-American right wing of the Republican Party that's shanghaiing our government, wake up, people!
Well, and there you have it. Well, Johnny, you've certainly perhaps... put a few people, I don't know what you've done with them, but you've certainly gotten our first phone call ever, at least in 2 months. I'm very impressed. We have to have you on every other week here. Is there more you want to add before we call the police?
No, but I would urge all of you now to get a copy of your favorite newspaper, Sentinel, New York Times, Wall Street Journal. Get about an ounce of lamb's bread, roll it up, ignite it, and pass it around.
Pass what around?
The spleef.
Ah, yes. You're advocating the recreational use of cannabis?
Yeah, recreational, religious, I don't care. Just everybody get high.
And, of course, you can send your donations, if you wish, to Free Radio Santa Cruz. By the way, for those who are interested in Free Radio Santa Cruz, our voicemail is 427-4523. If you have a public service announcement, advice on how to overthrow the government, end drug testing, or simply deal with a community issue that's a bit more mundane, leave a voicemail of up to 2 minutes at 427-4523. Our email address is frsc@cruzio.com. frsc@cruzio.com, post office box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And if you missed any of that, again, try to remember the voicemail number and just give them a call. That information is repeated on the line, 427-4523. If you're interested in giving specific information to me, Bathrop's peer Robert Norris, your host on this show, and if you want to be on my show or direct your comments to this show, you can give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Well, Johnny, before you start shooting up or shooting us up here in the studio, is there anything more you want to pass on to the audience?
Yeah, peace and love, brothers and sisters. You pusillanimous little pipsqueaks. You know what? I'm going to tell you, you're all like lawyers, right? You got no internal organs, your ass and your head are interchangeable, you got no spine, you're gutless.
You can prove Johnny Fresno wrong. Give a call to 423-4833 on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
About the homeless encampment or tent city that's near City Hall, Fort Lauderdale? I'm working with a group in California. Actually, it's a homeless rights group. We got some sort of vague information. We wanted to get some more specific data on this.
Hey, what information would you like?
Well,
And now we're finally actually able to tune into this tape we made of an interview with an assistant city manager in Fort Lauderdale named Horace McHugh. Yeah, this was a couple days ago. Horace gave us lots of information, although from a rather governmental point of view, of the homeless encampment that the city has sponsored for the last 5 or 6 years, something that actually I wasn't that aware of. I knew that federal courts had declared there should be safe zones in Florida and they could not enforce anti-camping laws unless there were such zones, but I wasn't aware that in some cities there were actually encampments set up downtown, and Fort Lauderdale is one of those cities. Let's hear this interview.
How long has this encampment been there? How large is it? And how did it come about?
It's not an encampment. An encampment suggests that, it's like an area that you corral people and keep them imprisoned against their will. It's actually a safe zone.
Uh-huh.
Which is completely different.
Okay, can you tell me more about that?
We here in Fort Lauderdale are in the same district as Miami. Actually, it's in the same state.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a case which took place in Miami where the federal judge had ruled that for the city to enforce its closing of public places and properties after hours and evict the vagrants and homeless people, there needs to be a safe zone or a safe haven or a place that they can go to receive basic needs of life during those times.
Uh-huh.
So based on that, around the same time we were having problems where we had increasing numbers of people congregated in the park and in the public places after closure, and in order, our community, I guess at that time, was very vocal in opposition because